We live in awkward times, my friend. A Protector of the Small fanfic, written by Journey Cat. Read by Black Glass. Chapter 1. Charm. If you don't want children, then just don't bet her. Neelan pivoted sharply, poked a long finger in a short, plump companion's chest, and said, You, my friend, have never sounded so unmarried in your entire life. Which, might I add, just law, is all of it. Not for long, Owen countered cheerfully, unruffled by the older man's snippet. Margery and I are getting married in just 2 months' time. I still can't believe you're wedding a coval, Valeron muttered, shaking his head. It's almost absurd. It's not absurd, Owen frowned. She likes dogs and horses. As much as you do, Neil finished dryly. Trust me, we know. I'm happy for you, Owen. Thanks, Kel. Mendelin, don't encourage him. Kelidri eyed her very red-headed friend. He's making a decision to spend the rest of his life with one person, Merrick. Forever. That's a huge thing. I'm proud of him. She absent-mindedly touched her pregnancy charm through her shirt. Gods, Kel! Neil groaned dramatically. You make it sound so bad. I don't mean it to, she retorted, irritated. Besides, you're happy with Yuki, aren't you? Well, sure, he said. That doesn't mean I want to be reminded of the fact that I made a huge life-altering decision to spend the rest of my life with one person. Funny, she thought in wry amusement. He went from being typical Neil to being moody whenever she wasn't around to being, well, back to Neil. It's a good thing she understands him, or at least as much as anyone can understand him. Exactly why are we here again? Seaver suddenly asked. Indeed, it was a fairly good question. The five of them were following Neil down the unmarked streets of Chorus. Although none of them really knew where they were going, the older man seemed to have a grasp on his bearings, because he was strutting confidently around shops and stalls. They trailed after him like lost little ducklings. I told you, Neil said. I want to buy a pregnancy charm for Yuki. That explains why you're here, Valeron pointed out. But I failed to see why you dragged us here. I asked Kel to come with me, he grumped. I didn't ask you guys. You just came with us. Yeah, Kel said slowly. Why did you ask me along anyway? Because you're a girl, he explained. I knew you would give me moral support. For what? Merrick asked irritably, dodging an overturned melon cart. You're buying a pregnancy charm for your wife. It's perfectly natural. I don't know why you had to bring Kel along. What is she going to do? Test it out for you? Why didn't you just ask her father for one? Or make one yourself? You're a healer. Merrick, Kel began, a little angrily. But Neil, glaring, interrupted and said, If I asked my father for one, he'd just tell mother, and then I'd have to hear their long spiel about how long they've been waiting for grandchildren. I feel weird making one myself, because I feel like I'm killing my own children. And I asked Kel here because I wanted her to buy it for me. Valeron choked. Are you saying that you're scared to buy a pregnancy charm? I'm not scared, Neil snapped, flushing as Seaver and Owen snickered behind him. I just didn't want to buy one. Yeah, Valeron rolled his eyes. Okay. Here we are, Neil proclaimed loudly. They all stopped in front of a small, neat shop, almost hidden between two large bead shops. The windows and doorway were dark. It didn't seem shady, but you never really knew what kind of shops people set up on the streets of Chorus. This is it? Owen said doubtfully. We followed you all the way down here for this? I told you, you didn't have to, Neil said, annoyed. He started through the door. It's not like any of us had anything better to do, Valeron pointed out dryly. They all followed Neil doubtfully through the door. Inside it was dim, but not as dark as it outwardly seemed. A couple lanterns were lit around the small room. It smelled of incense, but not strongly. A pleasant strange scent of something like honeysuckle. There were charms hanging from rafters, with jewelry and sticks of incense neatly arranged on shelves. It was actually pretty, in an unassuming way. "How did you find this?" Merrick asked, a little awed. "The lioness is a healer," Neil told him. "She showed me some things when I served her every whim. And this is out of the way. There's no way it can get back to Father, so I don't have to listen to his and Mother's woeful grandchild speech." "I recognize that voice," someone said quietly. "Unfortunately." That startled a snort out of Kel, earning her a nasty look from Neil. "And he's brought friends." A woman appeared around a tall bookshelf. She was unassuming, dressed in plain attire, with dark hair streaked with silver. "I hope they're quieter than this one." "You'll be hard-pressed to find someone who isn't," Owen quipped. She smiled. "So, Neil, what brings you to my shop?" He glanced hopefully at Kel. She stared resolutely back. He sighed, then said, "I need a charm." The healer arched an eyebrow and said, "For the newly married knight? I understand. Here." She plucked one seemingly at random and offered it to him, adding, "I imported the ribbon from the Yamani Islands. Your bride will appreciate it, I think." Neil smiled gratefully at her. "Thank you. How much?" As he dug around his purse for some coins, the boys looked around at all the merchandise. Kel watched them and said, "Just don't touch anything. Remember what happened last time you guys were around Breakables?" "I still put that on Owen," Merrick scowled. "If he had just kept his hands off that glass bowl—" "It doesn't matter who did it," Kel interjected, as Owen opened his mouth to retort. "Just that it happened." And then the healer said, "M'lady, when did you get that pregnancy charm?" Kel fought a blush as her friend stared at her. She touched it again through her shirt. She was sexless to them. The fact she had a charm seemed to douse that theory. "I think 16, she admitted, avoiding Neil's intense gaze. "You need a new one," the woman said matter-of-factly. "The magic's gone."
"Gone?" Merrick sputtered. "How does a pregnancy charm just go bad?"
"Usually after 10 years or so, it kind of wears off," she explained. She was staring at Kel with an eerily knowing look. "But you can't be more than, what, 18? 19?
"Then how would it have gone bad?" Kel asked in a strained voice.
The healer was fiddling with some hanging charms. She didn't look at her when she said carefully, "Well, sometimes charms will lose its protection against pregnancy if the wearer has been having a lot of sex at one time. Like, all day." Something crashed behind her, but Kel didn't even blink. She stared at the back of the woman's head, wishing she could crawl under the floor. She was distinctly aware of several pairs of eyes, focusing disbelievingly on her. Even her Yamani training deserted her. Not that she blamed it. This was a situation quite out of her control. Her face felt like it was on fire, but her fingers felt cold. She watched helplessly as the healer politely excused herself to a back room, leaving Kel at the mercy of her prying friends. "I'm married," Neil began blankly. "To a beautiful woman, mind you. And I have yet to experience the joy of all-day sex. Tell me, what does it take?"
"I don't know what she's talking about," Kel blustered. But her mask was broken. They didn't believe a word of it.
"Goddess, Kel," Owen said, awed. "That's some stamina."
"Ugh!" Valeron choked. "I don't want to hear about that."
"The fact that you're having sex at all surprises me, frankly. I don't know how you find the time."
"Neil?"
"What Kel does in her private time is her own business," Seaver said carefully. She shot a grateful look at him, but he didn't see it. He was staring bemusedly at the wall.
"Who is it?" Owen asked curiously.
"No one," she muttered. "Really, I don't know what she's talking about."
"Do we know him?"
"No."
"Ha!"
Neil pointed a finger at her, almost accusingly.
"We do, don't we? Is he a knight? Oh, gods, if it's Garvey, we'll need to have a talk."
"It most certainly isn't Garvey," Kel replied, annoyed. "At least, it wouldn't be."
"We know, Kel," Valeron informed her kindly.
"Please stop pretending. You're not fooling anyone."
"If it's my cousin, I swear I'll kill him."
"You mean Dom?"
"Oh, it is," Neil groaned, clutching at his chest. "I can see it in your face."
"It's not enough to bed half the palace. He had to make a go at my best friend."
"Stay away from him, Kel. He's a bad egg."
"It's not Dom." She rolled her eyes, trying to get a grasp on the situation.
"Really, you guys, it's not a big deal. Can we just change the subject? Please?"
"Is that why you were absent from supper yesterday?" Seaver gasped.
"Hey," Valeron said slowly. "You weren't at midday meal either."
"Or breakfast," Owen chimed in.
"Come to think of it, you weren't even at supper the day before yesterday," Neil said.
He shuddered. Owen said, "If he's a knight or palace official, we can figure out who wasn't in the mess hall the same time as Kel."
"Thus figuring out who she's been wearing out that cursed charm of hers with," Neil finished triumphantly. "The process of elimination."
"Why does it matter?" Kel all but begged.
"Owen, please. Neil?"
"As repulsive as I find prying into your business," Neil said. "As your best friends, it's our duty to make sure you don't get involved with the wrong sort."
"I can look out for myself," she snapped.
"Once they start with the elimination," she thought with a sick feeling, "they'll figure it out, and there goes our low-profile relationship."
"Did you and Cleon?"
Valeron began, with narrowed eyes.
"No,"
she said loudly. Seaver looked very pale.
"This is not how I thought this day would go," he said to no one. "Really, I don't want to know about anybody's love life."
"Who wasn't at the meals the same time she wasn't?" Neil mused.
"Walden wasn't there for supper," Valeron supplied, looking like he was about to faint.
"Oh, but he was there for breakfast," Owen reassured him. Neil asked quickly, "Did anyone see Garvey?"
"What's with your creepy obsession with Kel and Garvey?"
"It's not an obsession."
"New Mayor? Master Oakbridge? Zaheer? Jansen? Alana?"
"Really, Seaver, she's sexually active, not insane."
"This has gone on quite enough. Merrick?"
Suddenly everything went very quiet. Kel covered her face with her hands, determined never to look at anything ever again. In spite of herself, she peeked through her fingers, just in time, apparently, to watch as Neil's head slowly, oh so slowly, turned in Merrick's direction. Soon Owen, Valeron, and Seaver followed suit. She couldn't help it. She glanced helplessly at him as well. Merrick had blushed so red, his face outshone his hair, which was saying something. He was doggedly staring at the ceiling, effectively cutting off any eye contact. She watched as the flush traveled down his neck and disappeared under his tunic. She knew for a fact that when he got nervous or otherwise excited, he got red all over.
"Not now," Kel ordered herself. "When all this is over, you can skip supper again."
The thought of what would happen if she said that out loud surprised a small giggle out of her. Instantly, their heads whipped around to glare fiercely at her. She wiped the smile off her face.
"Merrick!"
Owen said, stunned.
I didn't even think it would be a yearmate.
Apparently she has a thing for redheads, Seaver observed.
It's not a redhead thing, Kel protested.
Way to go, cousin, Falloran said slyly, nudging Merrick aside. I didn't think you had it in you.
I had to play the elimination game, Neil muttered glumly.
They all shared a moment of incredibly uncomfortable silence before Kel could finally say,
Now will you please, please drop it, and don't tell anyone. Don't want this to get out.
Anything you say, Seaver said hastily, tripping over himself in his hurry to exit. Not a problem, Owen agreed on his way out, pausing only to pick up some jewelry scattered on the floor. Falloran only shook his head, chortling as he followed Owen out. Neil sighed as the healer suddenly reappeared. She said airily,
This is an extra strong charm, made for those more amorous than others.
Kel fumbled for her purse. Neil sighed again, a little more heavily, and flipped the healer a coin.
This one's on me. And don't argue. This is my apology for interrupting your shenanigans.
So mote it be, Merrick finally said, sarcastically. Neil scowled as he passed him. The healer once again disappeared into the back room without a word. Kel wondered suspiciously how much she hurt before.
So,
Merrick drawled, more comfortable now that it was just them. Care to try out that new charm of yours?
I might have seen an inn on the way here,
she offered innocently. He said with a crooked smile, Lead the way, Lady Knight. Where's Kel? Esmond asked, as he set his tray down beside Falloran. Seaver took an extra big swallow of his water and gagged. For future reference, Neil said, stabbing some asparagus with his fork. If she's not at this table, don't mention her name. Ever. Esmond eyed them suspiciously and said,
Well then, where's Merrick?
Esmond, Falloran sighed, setting down his tankard. Just don't speak. Ever. End of chapter 1. Chapter 2. Bath. Another crumpled ball of paper bounced forlornly on the floor to join the rest of the pile. Neil tapped his fingers nervously on the desk before pulling another sheet of parchment toward him. Without looking up from his book, Falloran murmured pointedly, It's getting late, Neil.
I know that.
Neil muttered, with a scowl in his direction. He turned his attention to his window. Sunset had already passed. He bit his fingernails. So, Falloran continued, still not looking up, what are you going to do?
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
His older companion accused. Immensely, he replied without hesitation. It reminds me how... In spite of the fact you have 3 years on me, I still have more sense than you.
You hardly have more sense.
You don't see me writing bad poetry for my wife's birthday, which, principally speaking, is in 4 hours.
That's because you're not married, Neil said haughtily.
And if you give Yuki your poetry, you won't be either, Falloran retorted. What a horrible birthday this is going to be for her. It was very quiet for a moment. Then Neil asked mournfully, Is my poetry really that bad? Merrick sighed and closed his own book. He had tactfully refrained from any reply during the exchange, but found he could not hold his tongue at this, and said, I didn't want to be the one to tell you, but your poetry borders on horrifying.
Yuki doesn't mind it,
Neil shot back grumpily, his pride slightly injured. She's sparing you, Falloran informed him kindly.
Okay, Neil declared loudly. Fine. No poetry. I get the point. What do I do then? Yuki's birthday is tomorrow. If I don't get her something, I'll be a bachelor once again. This time with a 4-month-old marriage up my sleeve.
Valeron rolled his eyes at this dramatic speech and returned to his book. Merrick said practically,
Why don't you ask Kel? She and Yuki are close, she's a girl, and she knows you well enough that she's probably already told Yuki not to expect anything mind-blowing.
I'll ignore that last bit, Neil told him, but only because the general idea is a pretty good one.
He rose from his chair and stretched. Will you help me find Kel?
She's probably just in her rooms, Valeron pointed out.
Kel's never in her rooms before bedtime. Neil rolled his eyes. It's like blasphemy to her. God forbid she rest for an hour. If I've told her once, I've told her 1,000 times. She'll be seeing a healer every day if she doesn't slow down.
All right! Merrick exploded. We'll go. Just shut up.
We? Valeron asked.
His cousin glared at him and he sighed, closing his book.
Fine. This is Kel's book anyway. I might as well return it to her.
I can't believe we haven't found Kel yet, Neil blurted. She's the easiest person to find. All you have to do is look for the tallest person in a room. It's usually her.
The mess hall was almost deserted. Only a few stragglers remained, and Kel was not among them.
I can't believe we're still looking for her, Merrick grumbled.
With you, Valeron added. Neil stared at him.
You are being unusually malignant this evening, he said.
I've wasted almost an hour looking for someone who clearly does not want to be found, Valeron said dryly. That's almost an hour in your company.
Neil threw his hands in the air. I have been the brunt of so many jokes this evening. It's incredible.
Don't get us wrong, Merrick said. You're an okay sort. Just not when you have marriage problems.
Cleon would probably know, Valeron said suddenly, nodding toward a large red-headed figure across the room.
Wait, no. Kennan, come here a second.
You dolt! Neil hissed out of the corner of his mouth, beaming widely as Cleon made toward them.
They're not together anymore.
Valeron looked shocked.
For how long? He muttered.
Months, Merrick sighed. Cousin, you are a half-wit.
I didn't know.
What's going on? Cleon asked amicably. He looked slightly suspicious.
Whatever it is, it can't be good.
Nothing,
they chorused. Cleon stared.
Well, Neil here is looking for Kel and, we... Or I, rather. You can stop stepping on my foot, Merrick. That would be nice. We're wondering if you knew where she was.
Cleon continued to stare.
Why would I know?
Because we...
Okay, I did. There's no need for pinching.
Thought you two were still, you know.
I see, Cleon said slowly. Well, she was on the practice courts last time I saw her.
When was that?
A couple of hours ago, I'd say.
Fat lot of good that does us, Neil said dryly.
Thanks, Kennan. You've been a great help.
Who would know where she is?
Merrick inquired, purposely interrupting an irritable Cleon.
We've asked almost everyone in the palace, Valeron grumped.
What about Owen? Cleon asked practically.
He was with Margery, Merrick snickered. And Wilden. The stump looked like he had an ulcer.
Esmond?
A turnip knows more than he does.
How about Alana?
The dragon?
Neil snorted. I can't think of a single instance where she ever answered any of my questions. I can't imagine this'll be any different.
There is no one else, Merrick said. Really?
I can't even find Tobe, Neil sighed.
Is Tobe that boy who follows her around everywhere?
Cleon asked. Like a hound on a leash, the older boy nodded. You know, Valeron said, she could have just gone to Chorus. It's not like she's the palace hermit. I'm sure she meets friends there sometimes. Well, who haven't we tried? Merrick asked, disregarding his cousin's explanation. Neil brightened. I know.
This is the most amazing thing I've ever experienced, Kelladry thought, in something akin to awe. I never thought anything could feel so beautiful. I'm so warm.
How's it feel? His voice was nothing but a quiet murmur, a little sensual.
Incredible, she sighed, letting her head fall back. I don't think anything's ever felt this good.
Why don't you... What's that noise?
What noise?
I don't know. It sounds like a stampede.
Seaver! Neil exclaimed. Thank the gods.
We have been looking everywhere for someone who might know where Kel is, another voice added. I know you just got back today, but surely you've seen her somewhere.
Much to Kel's embarrassment, three more men followed her cursed best friend through the door. Valeron, Merrick, and of all people, Cleon. She kept very still, willing them away with her mind. At the moment they hadn't spotted her. They had marched right through without looking around. Now their backs were to her, as they faced a very pale Seaver, sitting cross-legged on the bed, and she was directly behind them. The slightest movement would have them spinning around to find her in a very awkward position.
Very awkward indeed.
Kel? Seaver sweated. No, I haven't seen her recently. Or at all. I don't see Kel on a regular basis.
Kel rolled her eyes.
Why do you need her?
I need help with Yuki, Neil explained.
I was helping him search for her, Merrick added. I have her book, Valeron said.
I don't know, Cleon said irritably.
I have no reason to follow them here, but they somehow suck you in.
Like a black hole, Neil offered.
What in Mithras's name is a black hole? Merrick asked in bewilderment.
Look, you guys, Seaver interrupted, finally regaining some composure. I really don't appreciate being barged in on like this.
I know, Neil said apologetically.
But, well, maybe you can help.
We're going to be here all night, Valeron muttered.
Yuki's birthday is tomorrow, Neil continued, ignoring him. I don't have the faintest idea what to get her. I've been told my poetry is lacking.
Lacking? Valeron chortled. I'm leaning toward excruciating.
Kel stifled a giggle.
Yes, thanks for sharing, King's Reach.
Just check her rooms, Seaver said, a little waspishly. It's getting late. She's probably there by now. I'm about to go to bed. Good night.
Should I buy her jewelry? Neil plowed on. She was never interested in anything like that, but... Or what about clothes? Is there a kimono shop around? She's not too fond of Westerner dress, you see.
Seaver doesn't know either, Cleon groused. No one knows. You're on your own. She can make do with poetry. It's not a big deal.
Maybe it's a good thing we didn't stay together, she thought, annoyed. If I was going to get Pearl of my Heart and Dewdrop every year, we wouldn't have lasted very long anyway.
It is, Neil insisted. It's her first birthday with me.
So mote it be. Merrick said solemnly.
You think it's all a big joke, don't you? Neil glared.
A bit, Valeron agreed.
Yuki is much more refined than the clots you're going to eventually wed, I'll have you know. She needs more than what a normal woman does. I have to be the one to give it to her, because she won't find it anywhere else. She needs...
Kel gave up. She was concerned that her friend would have an apoplectic fit if he continued his anxious rant.
For God's sakes, Neil, just take her on a picnic.
He began to turn.
A picnic? That's a pretty good idea. I never would have thought... Oh, Cal, it's you.
Ah! What's wrong?
Dear Mithras is...
Cleon, Merrick, don't turn around. Kel's naked.
What? Why is she...
with Seaver?
Are they having sex?
You mean now?
Yes, Merrick, Valeron snapped. At this very second.
Obviously not now, you dolt. Unless Seaver has some sort of anomaly we and the rest of the scientific world are unaware of.
Funny, she thought, how Neil could make an awkward situation far more absurd than it initially began. Seaver had his face in his hands. What little she could see was beet red.
Stop it, you guys, Kel ordered. You're overreacting. You can't actually see anything.
Neil and Valeron said you were naked, Merrick said plaintively.
For some odd reason, they had covered their faces with their hands, despite the fact their backs were already to her. She wondered why they didn't just leave.
That would be too easy, Kel thought, half exasperated, half amused.
I am, she admitted. She assumed she was going to be embarrassed, but found she was just aggravated. She didn't think her nudity would cause that much of a stir. But I assure you, you can't see anything from your angle.
She watched as Valeron slowly turned, risking a glance through his fingers.
She's right. You can't. Reluctantly, as though they didn't really want to, but were somehow pulled by powers greater than them, the other three turned as well.
All of them looked absolutely mortified. Kel pictured herself as they must see her, sitting in a tub much smaller than her, brimming with steaming water. Her legs were draped over the side, her toes nearly touching the floor. It was a cramped space for someone of her bulk, so she was forced to draw her knees up, which coincidentally shielded the more significant parts of her person. She had a book propped up on her knees that she had been half-heartedly reading prior to their intrusion. The most they could see was her legs, arms, shoulders, and head. That was why Seaver liked it when she soaked in his basin. He said it was the knowledge that she was naked, but that he couldn't see anything. She thought it sounded a tad silly, but she indulged him anyway. Sometimes he washed her back. And sometimes he did more. But she was positive now was not the time to think about that.
I can't believe what I'm seeing, Merrick muttered.
I can't believe you're looking, Neil snapped. His eyes were shut tight. Merrick was squinting at her, as though ready to shut his eyes again. Maybe he thought she was going to leap out at them. The image made her let out a strangled-sounding snort.
Are you laughing? Cleon said, flabbergasted. This is not a laughing matter at all.
Why are you still here? Valeron asked him.
Why are you still here?
I'm not married.
Why are any of you still here? Seaver finally bellowed.
There's a naked woman in a washtub, Valeron said blandly.
It's Kel, Merrick blurted, sounding revolted. She's sexless.
She decided not to take offense.
Get out!
Okay, Tazride, we're going.
And don't say anything to anyone.
Definitely not. They practically fell over themselves on their way out. Seaver looked livid, which was quite a feat. By nature, he was a quiet person. She found that she rather liked this rarely seen side of him.
How could you let them see you like this? He accused. And the fact that they didn't leave! The nerve of them!
Kel tucked away a smile. Right now, she had to concentrate on soothing him. It didn't take long. Of course, she had to move to the bed. There simply wasn't enough room in the tub for the both of them.
Nothing feels better than a hot bath in winter, Esmond said cheerfully, his hair damp from his own washing, as he took a seat next to Neil the next morning.
Cleon accidentally knocked his goblet over. "Please don't talk," he asked politely. Esmond eyed him, then shrugged. "By the way, does anyone know why Seaver wanted my extra-large tub? He didn't give me many details. Something about his was getting cramped or something."
"Esmond!" Valeron roared. "Shut up!"
Merrick debated on asking why Esmond would have an extra-large tub to begin with, but after a glance at Valeron's rather crazed grip on his fork, he decided to save that question for another day. End of chapter 2. Chapter 3. Wanderings. Alana rolled her head around on her shoulders and heard the satisfying pop of her neck tendons. Nothing could relieve the discomfort in her back, however. "Goddess, I'm getting old," she thought with a sigh. Traveling never used to be so cursed bothersome. As an afterthought, she added, "Or maybe it's my companions that are getting more bothersome." She chanced to look over her shoulder, just in time to see her former squire dump a cup of feed down the back of Nicolene's shirt. A squabble broke out, and the younger boy tried desperately to slap Neelan with the flat of his sword. Neither of their horses took kindly to this. She shook her head and turned back to brushing down Dark Moon. It was much easier on her indigestion if she remained oblivious. Only Neil would be foolish enough to dither about the stables. "The only one with any sense around here is Kelladry," she thought with pride. "A perfect level-headed leader. And so tall." "Copper for your thoughts," a voice said quietly to her left. Alana smiled wryly and murmured, "I'm jealous. I would have loved to have Kelladry as my squire for 4 years." Raoul snorted, his snapping black eyes eyeing her over his big destrier, and said, "You'd have had to pry her from my cold, dead hands. I wouldn't have taken that queen's coat for all the gold in the king's treasury." "He wasn't so bad," she allowed. "He slept a lot." In unison, they both glanced back. Kel was wagging a finger at Neil as she spoke to him, and he smiled shamelessly and, or so he probably thought, winningly. "There is no help for him," she said, resigned. Raoul did not disagree. She hoped Tom was back from the university. George was good enough company, but with Alan back at the palace, and Allie-Anne fussing over her crow babies, the silence at the swoop was almost unbearable. But George had only mildly remarked he had not seen Tom, which could either mean he had yet to arrive, or that the boy had just secluded himself in his workroom. He loved the magic, just like his namesake, bless him. "I still think Corus was closer," Neil said loudly. "We could have been there in the same time it took us to get here." "Don't be ridiculous," Kel said. "Pirate Swoop was much closer." "I'm sorry, but I don't seem to recall geography being one of your better subjects." "I'm sorry, but I seem to remember Kel doing your geography assignments nonetheless." "You're impossible," Neil told Esmond. Turning to Kel, he said, "Sometimes I think you should have married Cleon anyway." Well, that was certainly unexpected. Alana half-pivoted to say something, and thought better at it. She also tactfully decided not to laugh at Raoul's ferocious scowl, directed at his innocent currycomb. She was quite familiar with his vendetta against that big red-headed lad. It was an oft-heard grumble throughout the years, if only because he was protective of his helpless little squire daughter. Helpless indeed. Pah! "It's a shame how it happened," Neil said mournfully. Alana knew that tone. She would have bet the deed to the swoop that he was about to say something very rude or very stupid. Or both. "It's not a shame," Kel said, surprised. "We're still friends." "Ah," he said sagely. "But you're deprived, Mindelin. You're not getting good in bed." Whatever he was about to say, and she had an idea, Kel cut him off with a resounding smack that had Alana nodding approvingly. She slanted a look at Raoul, and bit her tongue to suppress a chuckle. "Kelladry," she said instead, "pay him no mind. Queen's Cove, I believe you have some swordsmanship to prove to me." With a grin of satisfaction, she heard an audible gulp behind her. Once the horses were well taken care of, Alanna led her guests to the fortress for a good meal, and finally, bed. George wouldn't stop toasting everyone. A bit too far in his merry cups, bless him. And by the time she managed to usher the three knights away, they were all but swaying on their feet. Alanna herself could not get to her chambers fast enough, and smiled indulgently at George, snoring and quite naked, sprawled all over their bed. She slipped in next to him and snuggled down, preparing for a beautiful sleep. Four bells later, Alanna was still painfully wide awake. The goddess had never been a cruel mistress, but she was certainly toying with her now. As it had become obvious she wasn't going to fall asleep any time soon, she kicked off the covers and sat up. George snuffled and rolled over. She glared at him. "I wonder how many people will miss him if I just... never mind. I need fresh air." She swung her legs over the side of the bed with a groan. Out of habit, she grabbed her scabbard and buckled it around her hips and sheathed her sword. She stole out of her chamber stealthily. The corridor was quiet and dark, but she knew every step in Pirate Swoop. The stone floor was cool to her feet. Alanna took a right down a long passage. A flight of stairs led up to the guest chambers, where Kel and Queen's Cove and that Nicolene fellow were housed. She was passing them, on her way to the balcony, when she heard a quiet sound that barely resonated from upstairs. Thud. Immediately, Alanna went on high alert. In her youth, she had dealt with the likes of Duke Roger of Conte. Suspicion was ingrained in her head. It was what kept her and her friends alive all those years ago. George was passed out back in their chambers. Her children were not home. And her guests... well, certainly they would be too exhausted to be up. That left... what? An intruder? She grasped the hilt of her sword, and quietly sidled up the stairs. It was pitch black, but her footing was sure. She reached the landing and paused, quivering with tension. There was nothing there. Embarrassed and disgusted, Alanna went to sheath her sword, when there was another thump and a colorful curse from down the corridor. Without hesitation, she rushed toward the noise, preparing to ambush whoever was there. She didn't intend to kill. No, she wanted to question the foolish soul who thought to burglarize the den of the lioness. Unfortunately, she miscalculated. Alanna crashed headfirst into something big and unyielding. They both stumbled with yells and tumbled to the ground. Her sword clattered out of reach. She rolled over on the intruder, hoping her weight would be enough to keep him down. Instead, her opponent grabbed her around the head, effectively putting her in a headlock, and struggled upward. Alanna cursed and fought, but the arms that bound her were as strong as a blacksmith's, so she resorted to the only thing she could do. She bit him. Whoever it was let out a yelp like a girl and cursed, releasing her. Alanna stumbled forward, wheeled, and lunged blindly. She tackled him head-on, flattening him to the ground and straddling him. "You think you can come into my home without consequence?" she yelled furiously. "You cur! I'll cut you! I'll thrash you so soundly you won't be able to fu- Alanna!" a familiar voice panted. "Wait! What in the name of the Black God's holy name is going on?" And suddenly there was light. Alanna blinked, staring down at Caladry's flushed face. She glanced over her shoulder to see Raoul peering at them in bewilderment, holding a torch. "Great gods!" he said blankly. "I thought the fortress was falling down around my ears." She glanced back down at Kel. A voice mumbled incoherently behind the door beside them. It opened, and Neil regarded them with bleary eyes.
"Cannons, eh? Well, I always figured those damn Carthackers would double-cross us. Cut off their braids, I always said."
He glanced agreeably around, then spotted Alanna mounted on Kel and blinked.
"This isn't quite the dream I had in mind," he muttered, and closed the door. "Alanna?"
Raoul murmured, looking very much like he was holding in laughter.
Kelladry?
Pray tell, what are you doing? Is this what lady knights do? It's no wonder your lot went extinct. Alanna coughed and tried to remove herself from Kel as gracefully as possible. She knew she failed when Raoul stared very pointedly at their bare legs. Neither of them were wearing breeches.
I thought she was an intruder, she sniffed. I couldn't sleep, so I went for a walk. I heard a noise and I thought, well, I thought there was a threat.
It never occurred to you that it could be a guest? He asked politely. These are, after all, the guest chambers. She colored, but lifted her chin, and said haughtily,
You were all so tired, I just assumed no one would be awake.
She rounded on Kel, who was self-consciously smoothing her nightshirt over her thighs.
Which leads me to the question, what were you doing up?
For some reason, a very bright blush seemed to be creeping up on Kel's neck. She cleared her throat and said,
I couldn't sleep either, like you, so I was just walking to the stairs.
Alanna and Raoul stared at her. Suddenly, the door swung open.
Oh, good gods! Neil exclaimed, sticking his head out again, this time very much awake. It wasn't a dream. You really are outside my door. Although I seem to remember Alanna and Kel.
Alanna attacked Kel because she thought she was an intruder, Raoul explained. Neither of them could sleep.
Well, that's a lie, Neil snorted, because I fell asleep to Kel's snores. I could hear them through the damn walls.
The three knights blinked and turned to Kel, who was now painted scarlet.
Something woke me up, she began. Kel, a sleepy voice called. Did you find the pudding okay?
Kel hunched her shoulders as they all turned to the flight of stairs at the other end of the corridor. Armed with nothing more than a torch, Tom perched on the bottom step, looking perplexedly out at them in the blissful ignorance of not quite wakefulness. More importantly, he was naked as a jaybird.
Something woke her up indeed, Alanna thought, mystified.
Alanna? Raoul inquired. Why is your eldest child naked?
Better yet, Neil said, horrified. Why is he asking Kel about pudding?
There was a very long silence.
Tom? Alanna began, although she had no idea what she was going to say.
Kel! Neil choked, pointing an accusing finger at her.
You!
She was doing a laudable job on maintaining that Yamani mask of hers, although little could be done about the glowing red blush.
It's not what you think, she blurted. I really have no idea what he means by pudding.
Raoul rubbed his nose, stumped.
So, Tom, Alanna said desperately. I see you're back from the university.
Neil stared at her.
I arrived a couple days ago, Tom said conversationally. I thought Dad would have told you.
He said he hadn't seen you. I thought that meant you weren't here.
Tom? Interjected Neil. Why is Kel getting pudding?
Pudding? Tom said, vaguely surprised. I don't like pudding. Which reminds me, have you seen Kel? Even Kel stared at him.
Gods! Alanna suddenly laughed. He's sleepwalking again.
Sleepwalking? Raoul sputtered. This is the most bizarre sleepwalking adventure I've ever witnessed.
Well, if you see Kel, Tom said, waving at them dismissively.
Tell her I'd like my clothes back. She's always running off with them. I think she took my shirt this time. And make sure she doesn't forget the pudding. In unison, they glanced over at Kel, who staunchly watched Tom retreat back up the stairs.
Well, this has gotten too strange for me, Raoul announced after a moment. As far as I'm concerned, what happens at the swoop stays at the swoop. He turned to Kel sternly. We will either talk about this very soon or never again. I haven't decided yet. He shut the door behind him. It was very quiet.
I'm not entirely sure where my door is, Neil said, as Raoul took the torch with him, but I'm going to find a bed and sleep in it.
And Kel, he added dangerously, this is not over. There was a minute or two of fumbling and curses before Neil finally managed to find the handle. That left Alana and Kel alone. Finally, Alana began awkwardly.
Just so you know, I'm sorry I tackled you and led you into this. If I had known about you and Tom, well, certainly I would have approved. I do approve, of course. I think it's lovely. I mean, I know you and Tom aren't talking of marriage. Or are you? Well, regardless, you have my blessing. And George's too. I'm sure he'd be pleased. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
No reply.
Kel?
She ventured. Still there was nothing. Kel? She said loudly. Are you still here? She listened very hard. To her embarrassment, there wasn't a sound.
Well, you little sneak, she said to no one. I don't believe it. You've gone upstairs, haven't you?
And talking to yourself is the first sign of insanity,
Neil's muffled voice yelled grumpily from his chambers.
For God's sake, go to sleep.
Neil, I had the weirdest dream about Alana and Kel last night.
This may surprise you, Neil told Esmond, but under no circumstances do I want to hear it.
Well, fine, Esmond said irritably, biting into a piece of bacon.
Relieved, Raoul went back to buttering his toast. By the way, Esmond continued, what happened to the pudding? There was an entire bowl left, and the whole thing was gone this mor-
He gagged on a piece of buttered toast that was unceremoniously shoved into his mouth.
End of chapter 3. Chapter 4. Cinderella.
And then she said, "You don't put the fan there," Valeron chortled, following his friend into her room.
"Mindolin, your Yermani friends are just hilarious."
Kel, who had no idea what the first half of his story was, and wasn't sure she wanted to know anyway, said,
"Thank you?"
He threw himself down on her bed, and she winced as it groaned dangerously.
"My mattress can't take much more," she thought resignedly. "At this rate, I'll have to buy another one soon."
She said, "Valeron, I have to change. I'll meet you back at the mess hall." He raised his eyebrows.
"What, no peek?"
She fought down her amusement as she scowled and scolded. "Your mother should have washed your mind out with soap instead of your mouth."
"Maybe Mama didn't raise me so polite after all," he drawled, and yelped as the hurled boot found its mark.
All right, I'm going. No need to get abusive. Unless, of course, that's how you like—"
"Ow! Kel, okay, I'm leaving!"
With her hands on her hips, Kel glared at Valeron as he rolled off her bed. He carefully smoothed the wrinkles out of his tunic, combed his fingers through his hair, frowned as he plucked at his hose, until finally Kel half-giggled.
"Just get out, you dolt! I have to change. And no, you don't get a peek."
"What?" Kel barely stifled a sigh as her best friend peered around the door in disbelief.
"Kel, why are you letting Valeron peek at you?"
"I'm not," she said in exasperation. Valeron snickered.
"I said he didn't get a peek."
"Valeron's peeking at Kel?" another voice behind Neil exclaimed. "But what's there to look at?" That proved too much for them. Catching sight of her face, they crumpled in laughter.
The door opened wider to reveal Merrick's smirking face. She pointed a finger at him. "That," she accused, "was inappropriate. All of you, out. You can annoy me at supper. It's only an hour away. You can last that long, right?"
"I suppose we can try,"
Neil sighed dramatically, but he was already backing out of the door.
"Maybe you can clean up a little, too," Falloran joked, bending over to scoop up a discarded pair of trousers. "I mean, really, didn't you ever learn how to put your clothes away?"
"Like you ever did," Merrick said, rolling his eyes.
"Mithros, Kel, what do? Suck it all in? These are tiny."
Neil frowned.
"Are you calling her fat?"
"Kel, these are only inches around. You can't possibly fit these." Now Merrick joined them as they stood in a circle, eyeing the small waisted pair of breeches Falloran was holding doubtfully out in front of him. He scratched his nose and said,
"They're right. I couldn't fit these either."
There was a moment of silence.
"Kel?" Neil said slowly, an odd expression on his face.
Are these even yours?"
"Of course they are," she said in exasperation. "Why would someone else's breeches be in my—"
"Put them on."
"What?"
"Put them on."
"Yeah, if they're yours, then prove it."
"I don't have to prove they're mine, and I'm certainly not going to do it with you watching."
"Oh, come on, Kel. We've grown up with you. We don't care about your long, luscious legs."
"Not now, Falloran. Our Kel has a man's trousers in her rooms."
"I am not your Kel, and those are mine."
"Then put them on."
"I'm not—"
"Because they're not yours," Neil accused. "They're a man's. You've had a trouserless man in your room. I bet he was shirtless, too."
Falloran coughed politely. "I'll be the voice of reason here, and say perhaps Kel just wanted motivation to lose weight. You know, maybe her goal is to fit in them." She resisted the urge to strangle him.
"Whose are they? Come on, be honest. We know they're not yours."
"I think," Kel said, "that it is none of your business."
Neil stared at her for a moment. Then surprisingly he said,
"Fine, that's fine."
She eyed him warily. He continued innocently,
"I'll just make everyone else try them on, and then we'll know exactly who it is."
"What? Neil, know!"
"That's a great idea," Merrick said, impressed.
"Neil, for once in your life, you've made yourself useful."
"It is not a great idea at all."
"Are we in agreement it's not any of us?" Falloran asked. "We may be lean, trim, and handsome, but none of us are skinny, right?"
"Boys, if you actually go through with this, so help me, I will—"
"Let's go."
"Neil!"
"Try them on."
Try them on."
Seaver shrank away from the look in Falloran's eyes, and Kel tried once again to snatch the trousers away. He yanked them out of reach and shoved them back in Seaver's face. She empathized with the violated look on his face.
"Wait a minute," Merrick interrupted.
"Look at the trouser legs. They're much too long to be his. He's too short."
"Well, you're one to talk," Seaver said irritably.
Kel reached for them again, and this time Falloran stuffed them down his own trousers. It created a very large bulge that made her vaguely uncomfortable.
"Want them now?" he asked archly.
"Ask her."
"You ask her."
"Neil, she was your night mistress. You ask her."
"Say, Kel?"
"No.
Can I have them back, please?"
Neil sighed, pulling his head back around the corner. "There's no point," he decided. "The lioness is much too short for these." He gestured broadly at Falloran's crotch.
"And she's not exactly the trimmest bush in the hedge anymore, if you get what I—"
Queen's Cove? A voice said ominously. Did you just call me fat? He gulped loudly as the others moved away. Alana stood right behind him with her hands on her hips, her expression murderous.
Of course not,
he scoffed with forced merriment.
You know that you're a...
I don't want to hear it, she interrupted, holding up her hand. But I know you're up to some kind of trouble. Kelladry, can't you talk some sense into him?
I've tried, Linus, Kel sighed. It's no use.
Why are you all out here anyway, sneaking about like night creatures? You look suspicious. Involuntarily, Kel glanced at Valoran's crotch, where the trousers were stuffed. Alana looked there as well, and blinked.
Never mind, she sighed.
Queen's Cove, what did you used to say?
Ignorance is bliss.
Neil, Kel said. For the last time, it is not Garvey. But that didn't quell the feverish glint in his eye.
I know it is, he said in a low voice. You and him, you've always had a thing for each other, haven't you?
You've got to get over this obsession with Garvey, Valoran said solemnly. It's unhealthy.
It's not an obsession. Oh, look at him sitting there, watching the squire's fence. What a creep.
He's looking for a squire, Merrick said in exasperation. Let him be. Besides, he's obviously too fat to fit in them. Neil didn't look placated, and he sent one last evil look at Garvey before following them away. At least Valoran had taken the trousers out.
I give up, Neil sighed. No one seems tall enough and lean enough to fit these damn trousers. Valoran, you might as well give them back.
Kel snatched the trousers out of Falaron's hands, glowering at him.
How kind of you.
Oh, someone said. You've found my trousers.
Three heads whipped around to stare, and Kel cleared her throat, reluctantly turning around as well.
Master Newmare, she said as blandly as possible, it is good to see you.
Newmare's lips twitched.
Indeed.
Merrick and Falaron were whispering furiously with each other. Apparently, Neil could do nothing more than stare with a slack jaw. Tall and stork-thin, the man fit the description. Or the trousers, for that matter.
I was just coming to find you, actually,
Newmare continued blithely. He accepted the wadded trousers from her and tucked them under his arm.
Dane wanted to invite you for supper in our rooms, if you would like to join us.
Kel cleared her throat again, and struggled harder for a casual voice.
I'd like that.
Excellent.
He turned to leave, and as he strode away, he called over his shoulder.
We've also found your shirt.
There was a long, strained silence at his departure. She tried very hard to look everywhere but at her companions. Valoran began, and then stopped. Neil passed a hand over his eyes, lips moving. She suspected he was praying.
Well, Merrick finally said, we did want to know.
Yes, but I didn't want to know that, Neil snapped. This is weird. He's so old and he's Newmare.
His trousers, Valoran said in horror, were touching my... They were...
Ugh!
Merrick clapped him on his shoulder.
We live in awkward times, my friend, he said gravely.
Wait, Kel, where do you think you're going?
Well, she said, turning to walk backwards. I have to get my shirt, don't I?
Master Newmare must be working on one serious spell, Esmond commented, as he slid his trencher beside Valoran. His room is right above mine, and all I can hear is this crazy thumping noise.
Esmond, Merrick sighed, closing his eyes. Not now.
I'm serious, though. New mayor's working hard on something.
Neil groaned and pinched his nose.
Sometimes, he said, I have this overwhelming need to hurt you.
End of chapter 4. Thanks for listening.